reading from Luke 10, verses 29 to 37. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law," he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise."
Who are we willing to cross the street for? Where do we draw the line to those whom we will show compassion and maybe those that we don't? Not necessarily intentionally, but those that we actually don't step out to. Jesus told altogether 46 parables. This is probably the most generally well-known one. But it's often the most misquoted and often the most misinterpreted. And for many people, their understanding is little more than a Sunday school moralizing tale. And the Good Samaritan, or the parable of the Good Samaritan has also become very much part of our culture and our vocabulary. It isn't uncommon to see hospitals and places of mercy bearing that name. There's the Samaritan Purse Charity. Often on a news item, you'd say that somebody did a Good Samaritan task towards someone. And on the Jericho Road, there have been many hymns and songs included in it. And today, as a tourist, you can find the Inn of the Good Samaritan, halfway between Jerusalem and Jericho. Well, it was on that way, or on his way to Jerusalem, that Jesus was asked by an expert in the Old Testament scriptures, a theologian, what was the way to inherit eternal life? Of course, he didn't ask the question in ignorance, because he wanted to test Jesus and he wanted to hear his explanation of the scriptures. He addresses Jesus as teacher, therefore acknowledging him as a person of authority in religious matters. And he expected Jesus to give him an answer to what was a frequently asked question in religious circles of that day. And yet quite skillfully and at the same time gently, Jesus instructs the theologian in the teachings and the implications of Scripture. And see, Jesus comes back with a counter question when he says, what is written in the law? And in effect, what he's asking is, how do you recite the law in summary form when you worship in the synagogue? And the theologian responds by citing two commands linked by the word love. Love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, we don't know whether the theologian had any particular insight to put those things together, or he'd previously heard Jesus put those two commandments together. But Jesus' compliment, you have answered correctly, do this and you will live, he puts the query then, who is my neighbor? And that was a fundamental question of that day. You see, this Jewish man lived in a circular world in which he places himself in the middle, surrounded by his immediate relatives, and then his kinsmen, and finally the circle of those who claimed Jewish descent and who were converts to Judaism. Everyone else is excluded. He drew lines around what was a neighbor and what and who wasn't. The word neighbor had a reciprocal meaning. He is a brother to me and I to him. So, for example, when a Jewish soldier loses his life in armed conflict, the nation mourns because a brother has died. The circle is one of self-interest and ethnocentric. The lines are carefully drawn to ensure the well-being of those who were inside, but they deny help to those who are outside. In Jesus' day, there was a marked influx of non-Jews into Israel. The Samaritans separated the Jews from the north from those from the south. The Roman occupation forces were present everywhere, and the Hellenistic, the Greek travelers visited Israel regularly. And Israel functioned as a bridge of nations. And daily the Jews rubbed elbows with the foreigner. So the question, who is my neighbor, was a common question. In other words, do I need to regard as a neighbor, and who don't I need to regard as a neighbor? You see, the theologian didn't see any problem in regard to the first commandment, love the Lord your God. But the love for God cannot be expressed apart from the second commandment, to love your neighbor as yourself. And this man sees a problem in the second commandment, and he asks the question, expecting Jesus to delineate where the boundaries lie. To whom do I need to be a neighbor, and whom don't I need to be a neighbor? But Jesus does not answer him directly. Instead, he applies the principle of what's so-called the golden rule. Do to others as you would have them to do to you. And he tells a story of the Good Samaritan. You see, he's asking the wrong question. Jesus wants the theologian to ask, whom do I treat as my neighbor? Now, the road to Jerusalem, to Jericho, is only 27 kilometers long. It drops by 1,200 meters. The area is usually uninhabited, without vegetation. It is marked by limestone, cliffs, and gullies on both sides of the road. The road in Bible times had been given the name the Path of Blood, most probably because it was considered unsafe. The route was heavily traveled by pilgrims and merchants, and from time to time, bandits hiding behind those limestone rocks robbed these people. And stories of highway robberies along the Jericho Road have been recorded in all kinds of ancient texts right through to the present. Now, according to the story that Jesus tells here, a man is going down along this Jericho road. Whether he's a rich man or a poor man, we're not told. He's robbed. He's robbed because he resists and he's beaten. He's stripped of his clothes. He's left half dead along the road. And soon, after the crime is committed, a priest comes along on his way home to Jericho. Takes one look at the naked man and he passes on the other side of the road. If he were riding a donkey, he didn't even bother to get off to check whether this man needs help or not. A little later, a Levite does exactly the same thing. One look, keeps on going without crossing the street. Then along comes a merchant whose clothes identify him as being a Samaritan. And he stops. He looks at the man, helpless and lying in his own blood. And the Samaritan is filled with compassion. I mean, if he had been the wounded man, in the wounded man's place, he too would have expected relief. And so he approaches and gently lifts his patient. He tears some linen into strips. He applies oil and wine, which were the first aid tools of that time. And he cleanses and he binds up the man's wounds. Oil is to soothe the wounds. The wine is used as an antiseptic. And then the Samaritan goes the extra mile. He places the man on his own donkey. And steadying him, he brings him to the nearest inn. And there he nurses him for the rest of the day and the night. And with business pressing, he has to leave the wounded man the following day. And first he pays the innkeeper 2 denarii, which is probably the equivalent of about 2 days' wages. Probably would have covered him for room and board for a few days. And he gives instructions for him to look after him. He tells the innkeeper if more money is needed, that he would simply charge it to the Samaritan who will pay him on the return trip. And then Jesus ends the story by asking, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? And the theologian has to say, the one who had mercy on him. He couldn't even say that he was Samaritan. In other words, the Samaritan proves to be a brother to the wounded man. And so with an admonition, go and do likewise, Jesus dismisses the theologian. Now, apart from the robbers, there are actually 5 people portrayed in this parable. In succession, there are the man who was robbed and wounded. There's the priest. There's the Levite. There's the Samaritan. And there's the innkeeper. The focus isn't so much upon the man who was robbed and left half dead along the road, although he's the object of attention. And after the robbery, he's at first neglected, but afterwards he's lavished with kindness. And the story, also the subject of the story, really isn't the priest, the Levite, or the innkeeper. But the focus is on the Samaritan because he is the doer. He is the agent. He is the main character. And that's why the parable is called the parable of the Good Samaritan, not the parable of the man who was robbed and wounded. Because the wounded man is a faceless figure whose occupation, whose nationality, whose religion or race isn't given. We don't know anything about him. Perhaps the man without his clothes couldn't be identified by the priest or the Levite or the Samaritan. In short, the identity of the man doesn't matter. He plays the part of the neighbor, and that is enough. So I wonder, who are the wounded and the vulnerable in our world today? The victims of crime and abuse, the poor, the migrants, our First Nations people, LGBTQIA+, the addicted, the alcoholics, the homeless, the mentally ill, and so on. You see, there are many, many people in the same situation as the man was beaten and robbed, both overseas, in other nations, and locally. So to whom do we need to be a neighbour? Here's a short video of some of the homeless at Hope Street.
My name is Nick. I'm 38 years old. I currently reside in Waterloo and I work at Hope Street Cafe.
My name is Hunter Edwards and I've been living in Sydney for approximately maybe 5 to 6 months, and for the majority of the time using the things here to Hope Street.
My name's Theo. I've been at Hope Street about 6 or 7 years, but I've worked with people around the area for probably about 15 years all up.
I really like working here because it gives me a chance to meet some different types of people that I wouldn't normally come into contact with. This place deals with a lot of vulnerable, homeless, a lot of different type of people that many people don't meet on a day-to-day basis, and I find it very fulfilling. I get to, you know, say people's names that and put a smile on their face that maybe, you know, they're not, people aren't always treated very well with you.
Before I had everything, family, 2 dogs, 2 cars, a Harley. Money wasn't an issue, nothing was wanting. And when you lose it all, yeah, it's quite a wake-up call. You know, especially when 2 years ago, I used to come frequently around this area. And 2 years before then, anyone would have told me or asked me, "Do you think you're going to be homeless?" I would have said, "Yeah, go fish." No way. Alas, yeah. Even I'm an educated man, education doesn't save you sometimes from those little mishaps.
Like, people end up homeless for all different sorts of reasons. I'm currently homeless myself. I never thought it would happen to me. In all truthfulness, I used to look down at homeless people. I was better than them. I used to feel sorry for them. But I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me. I don't think people realise the sort of reasons that people become homeless. It can happen to anyone, flash of an eye.
I'm what you would call a rough sleeper, so somebody that sleeps out on the streets. Before, I used to be quite narrow-minded and arrogant to homelessness and homeless people. I guess my experience is that I've grown as a person, because I now see that, you know, that it can affect anybody at any time.
This really could happen to you. Like, you just have to be open-minded and not, "I'm all right, I'm okay, I don't have to worry." No, we're all part of it. It all affects us somewhere along the lines when someone gets hurt, you know?
The robbers come and go. They commit the crime and leave. It's useless for us to speculate whether they belong to the leftist zealot party, or whether they bore a grudge against the man, or whether they were local residents making a living out of robbing travellers. The priest and presumably the Levite were on their way home from serving in the temple in Jerusalem. And as we were reminded last week by Lawson, by religious law, they weren't allowed to touch a corpse. Should they transgress the injunction, they would inconvenience themselves socially by being unclean, and financially by having to pay burial costs, and professionally by being barred from priestly and Levitical duties. A priest who contacted uncleanness would have to endure humiliation, would have to buy and reduce to ashes a red heifer for the purification of the ritual, which would take a whole week. Of course, the robbed and wounded man wasn't quite dead. But the priest or the Levite didn't even bother to get off their donkeys and to check or to administer first aid. In the story, the man was alive and the members of the clergy couldn't very well excuse themselves. Whether they were afraid of being ambushed, were hard-hearted or being inconvenienced, or believe they might interfere with God's judgment that had struck a wayward sinner, or they were too conceited as religious leaders to stoop down and help a helpless victim, we will never know because we're not told. But the fact is that the priest and the Levite showed no mercy. The religious showed no mercy. And yet it's the Samaritan who is depicted finds a warm spot in everyone's heart. He knows what to do and he does it well. And race and religion and gender and class distinctions are unimportant to him. He sees a fellow human being in need, and he is the person to help. Again, as we saw last week, Samaritans were not the most lovable people. Their hatred towards the Jews had erupted in numerous ways. For example, sometime between 9 BC and 9 and 6 BC, they had desecrated the temple area to prevent the Jews from celebrating the Passover feast. They did that by scattering human bones all across the courts of the temple. And in the eyes of the Jews, Samaritans were half-breeds. They'd settled in the land of Israel during the Jewish exile, and their Bible consisted just of the first 5 books of Moses. They'd built their own temple on Mount Gerizim, which the Jews destroyed then in 128 BC. And because of their profound hatred, the Jews didn't associate with the Samaritans. And in the Jewish synagogues, the Samaritans were cursed. The Jews prayed that God would exclude them from the life thereafter. And yet this traveler, known by clothes, speech, and manners as a Samaritan, stops his donkey, stoops down in kindness, and he helps his fellow person. He didn't ask whether the wounded man was a Jew, a Roman, a Greek, or Syrian. He gets his hands dirty. It's sacrificial, uncomfortable, and messy actions that is motivated by compassion. And friends, if we are going to show compassion to those in need around us, you see, like Jesus, he embraced the same humility. He gets down in the ditch in order to lift others up. For him, the person naked, wounded, and half dead was a brother in need of help. And he readily paid the innkeeper the necessary money to keep the man at the inn for a few days. And most likely he provided clothes as well. See, the Samaritan didn't do this work of love and mercy on a reciprocal basis. He could have asked the patient recovering to repay the amount the Samaritan had spent on him. He didn't even know whether the patient would express gratitude after learning who had treated him. The Samaritan's actions represented a genuine sacrifice of money, possessions, risk of health and safety, and many hours of loving, watchful care. He embodies the good news of Jesus through actions, not only words. And by taking care of the wounded man and staying with him in the inn, the Samaritan ran the risk of being regarded as the perpetrator of the crime. The stranger who involves himself in the accident is often considered partially, if not totally, responsible for the accident. And the last person mentioned in the parable is the innkeeper. He receives very little attention. He must have known the Samaritan because of frequent visits. A relationship of trust and of mutual confidence had developed between them. There is a clear testimony to the moral conduct of the Samaritan and the partnership that they entered into together. He was a man the innkeeper could depend upon. "Look after him," says the Samaritan. "And when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." You see, the Good Samaritan didn't work alone. And while he funded the longer term work, it was the innkeeper who cared for the man. They partnered together to bring healing and transformation to this man's life. That is why we have mission partners. It's why we work with Hope Street and other overseas partners. We are called to partner with God and each other. During his earthly ministry, Jesus teaches the far-reaching the demand of the Lord to love the neighbor as yourself. And in the Sermon on the Mount, the command doesn't stop with the neighbor, but includes the enemy as well. "Love your enemies," says Jesus. In Matthew 5:24 and Luke 6:27. In the case of the priest and the Levite depicted in the parable, the word neighbor referred only to those who were part of their inner circle. If you weren't a Jew and weren't one of them, then you were excluded from any compassion or help. But an unidentified person, robbed, beaten, unclothed, and half dead, simply did not qualify as being a neighbor to them. You see, for the theologian questioning Jesus, it was a matter of knowing where to draw the line. He wanted to know if love had limits. He wanted to justify himself. He wanted to ascertain whether he had fulfilled the demands of the law. And if the law could be used as a protective wall, a person could live peacefully in its shelter, where everything was clear and familiar. But friends, when the law is open-ended, love your neighbor, which includes love your enemy, a whole new world stands out in full view, making claims on the law. You see, Jesus put the spotlight not on the neighbor, who is my neighbor, but on the one who showed love and compassion. You see, the neighbor here is not an attractive person. In the parable, he's shown covered with blood, and he's naked, and he's half dead. He's unable to return the labor of love, the money, the clothes. He needs help. He can't repay. And to bypass this neighbor is to incur divine wrath, for it constitutes not only a transgression of the second great commandment, but the undoing of the first one as well. Because they are inseparably linked. The story of the Good Samaritan is timeless. And we can substitute today's occupations and nationalities and lifestyles and backgrounds, and nothing has changed since the day Jesus taught this parable. Therefore, this parable isn't a story of someone who did a good deed as if he were a member of the Boy Scouts. It is an indictment against anyone and any church who has raised protective barriers in order to live a sheltered life from the world around us, whether that be locally or globally. You see, love your neighbor as yourself is a command that reaches out beyond our own circle of friends and our own fellow Christians that we meet on a regular basis. It is a call to show mercy to all unfortunate people lying beside the Jericho road of human life. It's a call for all churches to show compassion towards those overseas less fortunate than ourselves. And it's a cry to affluent nations like Australia to alleviate the suffering and the poverty of countless people experienced in underdeveloped countries of our world. You see, the message that Jesus teaches by the means of this parable is then summarized in the short final words addressed to this theologian who evoked the story. When he says, go and do likewise. Or in the language of James, do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. I want us just to take a few moments to quietly reflect ourselves as we kind of maybe just bow our own heads. And I'll lead us in a prayer in a moment. But I just want us to consider, to whom am I to treat as a neighbor? And how am I to go about being a neighbor to them? Just think about that personally for yourself for a few moments, and then I'll lead us in prayer.